Touch it. Feel it here.
Bueno, buenos días. Good morning. Egunon. Hoy tenemos aquí a dos representantes de la película In Fabric, que compiten en la sección oficial de esta edición del Festival de San Sebastián. Tenemos al productor Andy Stark y al director y guionista Peter Strickland. Acaba de ser el pase, no sé si tenéis ya alguna pregunta, creo que es una película que da para debate. ¿Sí? ¿Le pasáis a él?
Me ha gustado muchísimo la película. Quería preguntar al director, sus películas son diferentes, son en cierto sentido rompedoras, como también lo era un tipo de cine de los 70, primeros 80 y tal, pues quería saber que, o sea, qué tipo de referencias ha tenido respecto a ese cine, ha tenido y tiene el giallo, el género de terror. ¿Qué referencias ha metido en esta película? Y aprovecho para una segunda pregunta. He visto en los títulos de crédito el nombre de Ben Wheatley como productor ejecutivo. No sé si han trabajado ya juntos antes o esta es su primera colaboración. Gracias.
Do you want to answer the producer question first?
You go first.
Okay. Keenholz was a big influence on this film. The sculptor, he, not always, but he made a lot of mannequins with a lot of resin dripping down their faces, which kind of hark back to my childhood. I used to do, and I ended up in a lot of shops as a kid, you know, ladies department stores, a lot of mannequins with very thin, long fingers. And I used to have a lot of nightmares about mannequins, and Keenholz, when I thought I got over it, Keenholz came along and just brought it all back. So I think he was a huge influence. I mean, I'm aware there's a lot of talk about giallo, which is obviously it's a good thing, like whenever that's mentioned, but it wasn't, I mean, I love, you know, Martino, Argento, Bava, all those people, but it wasn't at the forefront of my mind. Maybe subconsciously that came into it. But to be honest, it was these department stores in, I don't know about Spain, but in the UK, they were out of time. They were like strange other worlds. They were not like your chain shops. So you'd see this dumb waiter and with the clothes coming up and you'd wonder. I mean, I tried to look at the film how I used to see things as a kid. So would a member of staff go into that dumb waiter and maybe live in the basement? Are they making clothes in the basement? Are bodily fluids from the mannequins being used as dye for the clothes? Is the manager having an orgasm, and is his sperm decorating the clothes? Is it drying and making a beautiful pattern? So it might sound preposterous, but bodily fluids on clothes, all of us here are gonna end up with sweat or something on us, and That's the haunting element of clothing, that the human contact with that. That was the starting point, really. Oh, yeah, Ben, yeah.
Rook Films is a company that Ben and I started to make Kill List, the film, the Wheatley film. So I've produced six films with Ben, I think. So that's Ben's role on this film. So it's a Rook production, so he's part of Rook.
Hi there. I don't know where to begin. Like, if you run out of questions, just bring them back, because I could ask like for the whole day here. So first of all, are these witches using the dress as a tool? I think I understood the movie, okay, but some things I missed, I think. So I will ask about some stuff about that. Are these witches using the dress as a tool, or are the witches controlled by the dress?
I mean, that's a question I shouldn't really answer. I mean, it could be both ways, of course. You know, there's an element at the end of the film with the sweatshop where you can see just about this a thread coming out of the character's veins. So there's this idea of blood and menstrual blood maybe acting as this kind of dye. So really, the dress, the important thing about the dress was it is random in its logic. It's not judging the characters for being consumerists. I mean, they're not consumerists. If I was in Sheila's position, I would buy four dresses. There's no reason why she shouldn't buy that dress. So it was very important for me to have no judgment, that the dress, it's like cancer. There's no logic, it's random. It kills without any sense whatsoever. It's made and it's let loose. And the idea of the sails that basically get rid of it, it's gone. We're not gonna take it back. So whenever the dress appears back in the store, when Sheila tries to take it back, or when Babs turns up in the dress, it's kind of this kind of abject item. It is like fabric abjection, if you can say that. That once it's secreted out of the store, you don't want it back. It's gonna have its own life and kill again and again. We see the empty sweatshop rooms in the basement that more victims will appear. So really it was that element to it. The elements of Miss Lightmore's character controlling the dress, when the dress is moving in the wardrobe, you can see her in the store having these spasms or seizures, and the dress is moving accordingly. So there is a hint that maybe the puppet mistress is actually Miss Lightmore, but it's not. It wasn't something I wouldn't say explicitly.
I can keep asking, but let other people, you know.
My name is Paul Katzenberger from Germany.
Hello.
And first of all, I wanted to congratulate you to this film. It's one of the most unique films I've ever seen.
Thank you.
And
I wish I could say the same, but thank you.
I just was wondering, why did you put in so much violence? I saw a lot, many people leave, and I think it was because they couldn't put up with the violence in the film.
Interesting.
Why did you decide to have such violence?
Well, it was always a thing. It was going to be I wouldn't say a ghost story, because there's no ghost as such. It's a curse, but it was coming from that genre. I mean, I do see it as a genre film to a degree, that the dress kills. Violence, people are killed. I wouldn't say they're murdered by other human beings. But that was the whole nature of the story, that it wreaks havoc. It wouldn't be that film if there was no violence. It would just be a very different kind of film. But yeah, it just kind of had to be that way.
Yo también tenía curiosidad por una cuestión, así que me voy a lanzar una pregunta, y es el por qué la película está dividida en dos partes y dos narrativas vinculadas al vestido tan claras, ¿no? En el sentido de que podría haber sido una película que hubiese continuado con la historia de la primera protagonista, pero cortas para pasar a la despedida de soltero. ¿Y a qué obedece esa decisión de partir en dos? Entiendo que hay algunas rimas, que hay reflejos entre ambas partes, pero si pudieses explicarlo un poco.
It always had to be a chain of people. That was the number one thing. It was the idea of clothing. I mean, what I'm wearing is secondhand. So someone had this shirt before me, and who knows what they got up to. I'd probably give it to a charity shop when this shirt is finished. And so I love the idea of the cyclical nature of clothing. So I did a draft where I connected them more. I had Reg fix Marianne's washing machine. But the problem with that, it became too fatalistic. It became too logical that, oh, okay, it's all, there's a connection, there's destiny, and I didn't want that. The very important thing was the terrifying randomness of death. Then once you connect the characters, you lose that randomness. So really, the important thing was to live with Sheila, for me to fall in love with her, to all the characters. They all have flaws, of course they do. But even Babs, who can be a bit feisty, I like her a lot. She's very loyal to Reg. The idea is, the important thing for me was to regret killing them. If I find it easy to write that scene, it wouldn't be working. So it just had to live with them and almost see it like a domestic drama with punctuated by this absurd device.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that the idea of killing the person off in the, you know, it's testament to it working how annoying it is when she dies. And I think when you think about that, in the moment, that's a very difficult thing to address. But I mean, it's like Psycho, isn't it? You know, but when you think back on the film, it's actually extremely important that you like her enough to be disappointed when she's not in the film anymore.
I mean, there's definitely no judgment at all. There's a background of consumerist culture, of course, with, you know, with especially at the end with the looting and the fighting, all the queues of people. But that is very much a light-hearted, satirical observation. I didn't want to be doing this all the time, everyone, because I am a consumerist. I'm sure something I'm wearing, not this, but was made in a sweatshop somewhere in the world. So I don't want to be didactic. I don't want to be a hypocrite. You could argue it is critical of consumerist culture, but you could also argue that it's a celebration of the high street, shopping. I mean, I miss, I mean, this is a different thing, but I miss buying DVDs in shops. You'd ask someone's opinion, you'd meet someone in the store. You go to a DVD shop now, it's like a ghost town. There's just no one there. I mean, I hate online shopping. I don't want an algorithm recommending Jess Franco films to me. I want a person recommending Jess Franco.
Hola, quería preguntarle si le ha sorprendido que esta película esté en la sección oficial y luego también me han comentado que el proyecto iba encaminado para una serie, porque la historia, bueno, son como dos historias, pero podría haber aportado como más personajes rotando con el vestido, ¿no? Y luego la inspiración, la última, la inspiración de los dependientes. Tanto su manera de vestir y de comportarse, ¿de dónde viene?
So, can I cast my mind back? First question. Oh, damn. What was the first question?
How many parts?
Oh, how many parts?
Was it yeah.
TV? No, it was. Who told you that?
Oh, yeah,
honestly,
right.
Yeah.
Are you surprised?
Well, I'm surprised that someone said
constantly
that.
Constantly surprised.
There were more characters, but there was not enough money to do that. So it was tough doing it as it was. We only had 26 days. I mean, the more characters, the more locations, it became tougher. So there was a choice: either we make it or we don't make it. So. But yeah, I mean, there's always the element that it can just continue. Could end up like Police Academy, you know, with seven sequels. My apologies, sorry.
What was surprised it was in selection.
I'm always surprised it gets anywhere. I'm very pleasantly surprised. I mean, when you make a film, honest, I'm not trying to be falsely modest. I know I'm British and we're very, you know, falsely modest, but when you make a film, you just have no idea whatsoever. All you see is someone laughing at you in the crew because you've got the wrong lens, that kind of stuff. You just see all the negative things. Maybe that's just the way I am, but yeah. So no, I am surprised, absolutely, yeah.
I don't mean to be sycophantic, but it's interesting to me that a film like this can get into official selection here, which means the selection is about cinema, not about celebrities. And it's lovely. I mean, to me, the film is, there's a lot of sort of pure cinema in the film, and that's why we like films. You know, they're not scripts and they're not politics. They're a collision of sound and vision and create the thing why we're all here. And so it's wonderful to feel that something that is celebrating that can actually be showcased at this sort of festival, which is great.
Um, También, sorry, could you repeat that? I'm really sorry. It's not you, it's just...
Había otra pregunta sobre los dependientes, la caracterización de...
Oh, yeah, the witches' costumes.
Just...
I like the look and the costumes of the shop.
Yeah. I just like that look. But it was also, those department stores were always out of time. They were not like chain stores. It felt, the one I based this one on is a place called Jackson's in Reading, and it closed in 2013. And even in 2013, it felt like 1950. We could have set this film now. The only reason I didn't was because I wanted that wonderful guessing and the anticipation of the Lonely Hearts before Tinder came along, where you can just see everyone's face. It was very important to have that guesswork. So I tried to push it as close to the edge of that as possible, which I guess it was 1993, and then I guess the internet took over afterwards. So the film is set in 1993, but it feels like the 70s because the stores had that 70s, 60s, 50s feel. So really it was working with Jo Thompson, who was a wonderful collaborator. She showed me a lot of these outfits, which had this gothic feel. Yeah, maybe that's where some of these films by, I guess maybe Franco more than Argento, came to mind, a lot of his vampire films. So yeah, I think it was just a lot of back and forth between, with Jo Thompson, and talking with Fatma, who plays Miss Luckmore. I mean, she's always a collaborator, I always work with her. And yeah, just seeing what works, really.
No, en la primera fila.
Sí, gracias. Recordando los personajes de la película, no sé si hay alguno que se libre de tener algún tipo de fetiche, aparte del evidente del vestuario, del vestido, está el hijo de la primera protagonista con los dibujos, los dos personajes de escuchando los temas de la lavadora... ¿Cree que todos somos fetichistas?
I am. I don't know about anyone else. Are you? Well, yeah. I mean, but objects... I love working with objects. Maybe it's because you don't have to deal with agents, but I think what it is, it's... Oh, there's an agent here, sorry. That thing that Schwankmeyer and the Quay brothers and Boonwell, to some degree, Borovchik, Parajanov, they all understood there's this kind of alchemical power to objects. For me, this is absolutely a fetish film, but not in the sexual sense so much. I mean, there's an element of that. I mean, with Reg and his hosiery fetish, and it might be amusing, the same way Babs with her body dysmorphia is amusing, but actually it's not amusing. I mean, she's haunted that she can't put on a dress and feel good about herself. She's always haunted by this, and Reg is haunted by, if he sees a woman wearing tights, it just creates this very deep longing in him. So it was trying to look at it affectionately, but also seriously at the same time. But really just clothing with, depending on who wears the clothing. So Gwen's underwear disgusts Sheila. She picks it up and wants to throw it back in the bin. Vince can't wait to have he even wants his face printed on her underwear. That's how much he's in love with her bodily fluids. So it's really, but the fetish thing extends beyond that. It goes into sound as well with autonomous sensory meridian response, where you have this very, I wouldn't call it erotic, but it's this tactile response to certain sounds. So the film is very, very tactile. It's about texture, not just physical texture, but sonic texture. The fact that Reg, being unaware of this, but he sends everyone into a trance. And it is absurd because I think a very small percentage of the population have this condition. But I think what I try to do in my films is taking something which is niche or a minority, but having all the characters have these fetishes. So in The Duke of Burgundy, everyone loves sadomaso. In this film, everyone loves washing machine mantras. To me, that's kind of beautiful.
Sí, hola, buenos días. Bueno, yo tengo como diferentes preguntas en relación al vestuario que me ha parecido muy intrigante. La primera es, bueno, efectivamente había visto que lo había desarrollado Joe Thompson. Quisiera saber un poco cómo ha sido este trabajo, quién ha sido la, bueno, cómo ha sido la creatividad del desarrollo del vestuario. Por una parte, qué inspiración o si la ha habido para el vestido rojo en algún otro vestido, en algún vestido clásico de algún diseñador en concreto. Si hubo la elección de un tejido en concreto, porque sí que se veía que el vestido, bueno, pues tenía una volat, bueno, una ligereza, etcétera, concreta, que yo creo que es imprescindible para la plástica, ¿no? Para el movimiento, demás. Luego, por otra parte, me ha llamado mucho la atención, pues bueno, la estética victoriana de lo que es el señor Drácula con las concubinas. Y bueno, no sé, esto ya ha sido una reflexión mía particular, no sé si hay una analogía con el vampirismo de ellos o su estructura y el consumismo, o si por contra iba más enfocado a realmente a desarrollar esa estética gótica, romántica y oscura de la maldad. Y luego, por otra parte, al margen del vestuario, hay un momento que a mí sí me gustaría, a lo mejor, si me podéis dar algún tipo de pista de interpretación, aunque a veces ya sé que no es necesario, pero sobre el significado de ese momento en el que, bueno, pues la vampira, esta protagonista, se introduce la foto de la modelo muerta por la vagina. No sé, yo de repente pensé que era como la vuelta, el regreso del mal a su casa, ¿no? Porque al final el útero es como una casa. No sé si esto ha sido una interpretación mía o realmente no era necesaria. O, bueno, no sé, si me pueden dar alguna clase de explicación sobre este momento. Muchas gracias.
That was wonderful. Very touched, thank you. I love that idea of the uterus and... But I saw that scene as something quite beautiful. It's menstrual blood, by the way. I know some people thought that she was wounded. The mannequin was not wounded. But going back to the dress, so with Joe, it was just a very long process of showing each other things we liked. But the material was very important, and just purely, as you say, with movement, to have it undulating, to feel like some amoeba-like creature. So chiffon and silk, that seemed the most adaptable for that, really. It had to be red, I mean, for obvious reasons. Again, harking back to the blood from whichever part of the body. And the scar was very important for me, because I don't know how successfully we managed this, but in the end of Sheila's story, you see the scar on her abdomen is exactly the same shape as the scar on the dress, in the same position. Originally, it was going to be in a vaginal shape or configuration, I should say. And I had a lot of problems with that. It felt very aggressive because she's going to have a wound there, and it felt, especially being a man, it just felt it's going to give some very misogynist signals, which is, I didn't see this film that way at all, so we quickly ditched that idea. So the design is much more abstract. So in terms of how it, you know, it drapes around the body, I mean, that's Joe, really. I mean, she would show me stuff, and that for me, that's more intuitive. I just say if I like it or don't like it. Joe has much more of an idea of why she's doing certain things. And we try on
the shop assistants' costumes are designed. There's a company in Britain called Sands who make a lot of. The woman who runs it directed Little Dorrit, the Dickensian, the Dickens adaptation. So they've got a kind of costume house, theatre, this kind of incredible place that is just packed full of, you know, Victorian, Dickensian kind of amazing period costume, and they actually designed the stuff for the film in that specific place.
Did I get everything? I'm not sure.
Bueno, el momento de introducirse el Bueno, eso, el momento de introducirse entonces el folleto en la vagina exactamente, o sea, ¿qué era?
Well, you were correct, that's where it went. Well, again, it's the idea of things coming out of the body, things coming back into the body. It's becomes like another space in a sense. So yeah, it's one of my favorite scenes, that one. Yeah.
Don't look at me.
Hola,
no, but seriously, I think it's really important for me to, I never question what the director wants to do in the film. I mean, I'm a fan of films and I want the mystery and the magic and the illusion, and I don't really care if I understand it or not. It's about making my brain percolate and thinking about it in the moment and next week and next year, and you know, it's the magic to me is what it's all about. You know, I don't care about the, you know, the standard narrative arc of things. Is just boring, you know, and I'm not interested in that at all. So I try and hopefully allow Peter to do what he does, and it's great to be in that world, you know, and that's the point of this stuff. It's unique, isn't it? And that's why it's good, I think, you know.
I mean, it's always difficult to balance logic and mystery, and it's always that push and pull between them. A bit of mystery is fine. I mean, I'm not, when things get too abstract, I'm lost. But for me, this film had to be, there are mysterious elements that might not make sense, but to me, the whole film is grounded in things that I recognized in terms of domestic life, day-to-day, nine-to-five jobs, being a customer, serving customers, even the language. It might seem exaggerated, but I remember going to the job center a few years ago, like a year before I made Kotlin Vargo, and there was an advert for a Twilight replenishment operative. I can answer the nighttime shelf stacker. So, you know, the English love euphemisms, especially in retail and in the corporate world. And so to me, everything is like an elastic band. The house scenes are, the elastic band is relaxed, say, and Deadly and Soapers, we're stretching it as far as we can, but everything still connects to reality somehow. For me, the only strong illogical element is the dress killing people. But everything else had to be grounded in some kind of reality, to some degree, of course.
Okay, vamos con la última pregunta.
Sí, mi pregunta es bastante simple. Si como director quedó plenamente satisfecho con la película, con el resultado, y si hubiese podido, hubiese hecho algún cambio.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think any director is satisfied with what they do. There are moments where I'm very happy. I thought the mannequin scene with the washing, I thought we really, all of us, all elements came together really nicely. There was an intensity there. But even that, when I look back on it, I remember when we were shooting it, we couldn't control the sound from upstairs. There was a working shop above us. And I don't know if you remember, Tarzan Boy by Baltimore is this kind of 80s pop hit. But when Fatma was licking the menstrual blood, this chorus from Tarzan Boy came through the floorboards. And so it was just this very incongruous element going on. So I guess my mind always goes back to these things on set. So I mean, everything I do, I would change it. But it comes to the point where you just have to just let it go. And no, I mean, everything I do is flawed, it's imperfect. And it will always be like that, sadly, you know. That's why I keep going, because we didn't get something right, and we'll try and make it right in the next film, but then we get something else wrong, and it just continues.
I'm completely happy with it.
Okay, pues si os parece lo dejamos aquí. Un aplauso por esta gran fiesta de película.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.